That accusation so aggravated the ambassador that he shot off letters to local newspapers disputing the charge. The decision to cease production had been ExxonMobil's alone, he wrote, although the corporation enjoyed the support of the U.S. government. In Washington, ExxonMobil's Asia Affairs lobbyist, Robert Haynes, met repeatedly with frontline Bush administration officials in charge of Indonesia policy at the National Security Council and the State Department, Karen Brooks at the NSC, and Ralph Skip Boyce at State. The corporation's message, crafted by an informal Indonesia crisis committee that included Haynes and senior executives in Houston and Irving, was that only the United States could resolve the Aceh War by brokering some sort of agreement between Jakarta and GAM. Haynes also made clear that GAM's decision to target ExxonMobil directly was a new factor in the corporation's experience of the war, that it placed ExxonMobil personnel at risk, and that this was the reason they had shut their operations. "You really need to get in there and do something," Haynes told Brooks, Boyce, and other Bush administration officials. ExxonMobil did not have a specific blueprint or plan of action, but like Indonesia's foreign minister, the corporation felt that only the United States government had the leverage to change the facts on the ground. "We are not diplomats, but we do know this is a problem, and you are the guys that can do it," Haynes said. ExxonMobil refused to negotiate with GAM. Its Achenese employees included many GAM sympathizers and probably a few formal members. Some of these local employees urged cooperation with GAM, but the corporation's executives in the United States concluded that their contractual and political position with the Indonesian government required them to be careful. ExxonMobil's position was that GAM was an illegal armed group, and therefore the corporation would have no direct dealings with its leaders. What the Bush administration might do was another matter. Ambassador Gelbard arranged a meeting for ExxonMobil at the Ministry of Industry and Trade, which was headed by Luhut Panjaitan, a retired four-star general. Ron Wilson arrived with Gelbard and other embassy officers at the ministry's headquarters, located on a riverbank beside one of congested Jakarta's major highways. It had not been a single event, Wilson explained to the Indonesian officials, but an accumulation of threats and near misses that had led to ExxonMobil's decision to shut down Aceh's gas operations. Snipers had fired upon ExxonMobil airplanes and had wounded employees, Wilson said. Hijackers had stolen more than 50 company vehicles. Assailants had bombed 4 company convoys by remote control. ExxonMobil has had an Indonesian presence for 100 years, Wilson said. The company had shipped more than 5,000 liquefied natural gas cargoes without missing a single one until now. It was in Indonesia for the long run and had made its decision to suspend production reluctantly. The safety of its employees was paramount, however. Panjaitan explained that Indonesia intended to restore security in Aceh by launching a limited offensive against GAM. New battalions of Indonesian forces were arriving around Lok Simawe as they spoke. Wilson chose his words carefully. "I understand how difficult it is to restore peace," he said. "I appreciate that the military is preparing to carry out operations in a careful, selected way. As a company, ExxonMobil cannot condone human rights abuses. The whole world is watching events in Aceh. Charges of human rights abuses could cripple efforts to resume operations." Wilson emphasized that his corporation had never paid money to GAM, despite the demands of Abu Jack and other commanders. "Payoffs would only aggravate the situation and lead to more extortion," he said. ExxonMobil did not demand that Indonesia's government reduce the risk faced by its employees in Aceh to zero, Wilson declared as the meeting concluded, but the corporation's employees had to feel safe traveling by road and assured that the workplace was not likely to come under mortar attack or that they might be kidnapped. The Indonesian government sought to persuade Wilson that it could meet his standards. Purnomo Yusgiantoro, then the energy minister, called Wilson and suggested they fly into Aceh on a government plane to tour the area so that the ExxonMobil manager could see that order was being restored and that it was safe enough to resume gas production. Wilson called Gelbard and asked if he should accept Yuskiantoro's invitation. "Don't be insane," the ambassador advised. "Don't go." The minister went anyway, alone, and GAM rebels shot at his plane. During the first week of April, Ambassador Gelbard flew to Banda Aceh, the seaside provincial capital of the conflict-ridden province, a flat and humid expanse of low-slung, water-streaked concrete buildings shaded by palm trees. A Swiss peacemaking organization, then known as the Henri Dunant Center, maintained a local forum for on-again, off-again talks between government and GAM representatives. Gelbard scheduled separate meetings with leaders on each side of the conflict. He raised the subject of human rights with Indonesia's government delegation. GAM certainly committed abuses, Gelbard told them, but the international community holds democratically elected governments to higher standards than guerrilla groups. ExxonMobil had no covert agenda in closing its Aceh operations, Gelbard said. The corporation had been entirely justified in its concerns about local security. The United States supported ExxonMobil's decision, but had not instigated it. The ambassador became more forceful when the GAM delegation arrived. "GAM is clearly responsible for the attacks on ExxonMobil," Gelbard announced. "Some GAM leaders are now even boasting about shutting down ExxonMobil." The previous year, he continued, Hassan Dutiro had promised in private meetings with Clinton administration officials that he would issue a public statement that ExxonMobil was not a target of the guerrilla campaign. He had never done so. "GAM's attacks on the oil company now were a major mistake," Gelbard declared. "The United States would not tolerate terrorism against U.S. citizens and economic interests. GAM had been very lucky that no American citizens working for ExxonMobil had been killed thus far. Even so," he warned, "there would be severe consequences if GAM did not stop the attacks immediately." The Bush administration had so far refrained from naming GAM a terrorist organization under American law. A terrorist designation would mean travel and banking restrictions for GAM leaders. The administration might reconsider that decision, unless the assaults on ExxonMobil property and interests ended. Moreover, the United States received many requests from the Indonesian military and police for help in fighting against GAM, intelligence, training, and equipment. "Do you really want us as an enemy?" Gelbard asked.